So in a very real way, meditation is more an unlearning than it is a learning. What happens as insights emerge in meditation is that which we have assumed, believed, invested in, think, feel, is real, begins to come into question. The core of meditation is the discovery of what you are, or you could say rediscovery, of what you are truly. Your true, you could say, identity. Funny thing about our circumstance, our situation, is that we have this vehicle. You could call the body-mind process a vehicle that is mysterious to us in the sense that we really at times can see that we are it and not it at the same time. We may feel that we are it when we're experiencing something very acutely or profoundly, like pain, for example. And yet, as we drift off into, let's say, just this spaced out spot that some people go to when they sit down and meditate, it's a little less clear what you are. Am I a state of mind or feeling state? Am I this physical form? What am I? And so in a very real way, what happens as meditation unfolds is that there is an unlearning of what it is that's been collected, gathered, invested in. And this specifically addresses what has been identified with as oneself. Okay? That's what gets evoked. Okay, so when many people sit down to meditate, and as you note here, you know, without instructions being given, you see what happens. Okay, and for a lot of people, without instructions, or even with instructions, where they will be spending time is either in thoughts or in bodily sensations. And sometimes there'll be the sensations of breathing. Those are bodily sensations too. Sometimes there'll be an emotional quality that emerges, kind of a quality of a mood. And if you say, well, what about memory? Well, memory is made up of emotion, it's made up of thought, impression, it's made up of visual image, that's a kind of thought. There may be some planning, ideas about what one's going to do, some hope for something, anticipation of something, anxiety about something, and so it unfolds. Until there is a settling below, you could say, the conceptual thinking mind. It's a very potent, seductive tendency to be identified with the thoughts that are happening as not only real about life, but belonging to you. And that can be disproved very, very fast. Because if the thought arises over here and develops right up here and then fades away over here, and you're the thought, well, what just happened to you? You just appeared and disappeared. But what often happens is there's a flow or a stream of thought that appears to be relatively solid until it isn't. And when the so-called solidity of the mind in the form of thought is pierced, even for a second, there is a space or an opening that can occur. And it isn't so much invested in then, for a second, that one is those thoughts. It's like they're pierced. It's like light penetrates through. And not only are the thoughts seen as not solid, but it's questionable whether they actually are representing anything real other than just words and pictures in the mind. But then even deeper, whose are they? Who owns them? We have an idea or a perception or belief that I am having these thoughts. These thoughts are mine. They're happening to me. So what happens in meditation is this begins to be questioned. And not so much thinking about it like, wow, but actually looking at something the way a child would look at something with just curiosity, like what is actually happening here? And this sometimes just occurs spontaneously. Or one is absorbed in those thoughts, rolling around in those thoughts, sometimes feeling some happiness with certain thoughts, sometimes feeling fear and unhappiness with the thoughts. But it's all happening right up here. Okay, this is the only place where thoughts are happening, if you look closely. Okay, they don't even make it down into your jaw. Now, words come out from here that can represent the thoughts. Right? Words don't come out here. Okay? The thoughts are happening here in the cerebral cortex. Okay? So what happens in meditation for many people, particularly if they allow the meditation to really develop in their life, they don't just kind of shop around and I'll try 5 minutes of that and maybe 10 minutes of that and how about a little of that and maybe I'll do a little Tai Chi on Thursday and then maybe a yoga asana on Friday. But they actually settle in and find the pause button. Because you can't find the stop button in this stuff until you find the pause button. And you can't find the pause button until you realize there's a big giant button called play. And sometimes that big giant button called play feels like work, feels like hard, feels like life. And it's in motion. And those thoughts are in motion. And those beliefs are in motion. And those assumptions are in motion. And we have no idea where they're going until it's seen that they're actually going nowhere. They're actually appearing and disappearing, which is another way of saying they're going nowhere. But then we come along with these actions that we take, physical actions, verbal actions, and the development of this flow or stream of life seems to get more momentum. Meanwhile, we know, without even investigating deeply, that this body-mind process, or at least the body, let's go with that, is going to just flat stop one day. All of this energy that's moving here in the breathing and the heart rate and the cranial rhythm, if you're into that, all of that's going to stop. We know this. So there's all this momentum, and then what happens? We've called that death. Now, I was talking to a woman the other day, and we were talking about this subject of dying, and she said, I've done my research, and I'm convinced that when you die, that's it. It's just blank. And I found that very interesting. She said she'd done her research. So I asked her, what research have you done? She said, well, I have examined other people. This is interesting research. I've examined other people, and it seems there are people who believe that something's going to happen, and they start to paint the picture. And I don't think they know what they're talking about. And I said, okay. And so, she said, because I don't think they know what they're talking about, it seems much more likely that I know what I'm talking about. At that point, I was like... And it wasn't really like arrogance and an entitlement. It was just like very strong belief. Now, meanwhile, she has an anxiety when she flies in an airplane, particularly when the airplane shakes. And when we looked at that, it turns out that when the airplane shakes, she gets more concerned that she's going to die. And then it turned around and there was a perception that life is precious and I don't want it to end for me or my loved ones, particularly my children. Okay, you see where this is going? There's the inevitability of dying or death. There is this perception of life is precious, Makes sense? And then there is this belief inserted in there that it's a blank screen at the end, nothing happens. And there was a firm investment in that. And as we were talking, she said to me, make sure you don't say anything to me that sounds like it's coming from a priest. Mm-hmm. At that point I said, okay. I have a whole bundle of conditioning unfolding here. Perception, belief, thought. And it's invested in. This is the way it is. Okay. So the only place in the process where there was any room to sort of like take a little peek was, well, is it possible that this investment in the blank screen is the way it's going to be? And she didn't have it just for her. That's what's happening to everybody. And I was included. I didn't get to vote. It's going to happen to you too. Pretty strong belief, right? So I introduced one term. I said, well, is it possible that there's some things about life that are mysterious? And is it possible that the things that are mysterious about life maybe aren't actually a problem, but are actually something potentially wondrous? Now this kind of perked a little curiosity. And so the only thing that was really ready to shift there in the conversation was, well, wait a minute. Maybe my assumption in nihilism, that's what it is, could be reconsidered. And so then she did a little thing with her hand. She said, well, I think what I'll do is I'll just kind of go like this inside myself and see what I can find. I said, okay. Let me know how it goes. I think I'll go like this inside myself. She took her hands, like she was moving the clay or the pieces of paper apart a little bit to take a peek. The natural curiosity emerged. And it was playful. And it had some enthusiasm. And it was not contrived. And it was childlike. And you might have felt similar to myself if you were present for the conversation. The emergence of that curiosity was beautiful. So that natural curiosity, when it begins to consider the possibility that this body-mind process and the way in which it's identified with as yourself is actually something you can do like this with. You know, like maybe just see it as like you just zip her down and take a peek. You don't like what you see, zip it back up. Okay, but some people go, well, I the zipper got stuck. I zipped it down, I took a look, and then all this stuff started happening and I couldn't close it back up. Okay, well, lubricate the zipper before you bring it down. You know, put a little of that stuff on it that makes the metal slide better. Okay? Play with it. It's your life. Yeah, don't you think you ought to be able to play in the playground of what you consider to be yourself? Well, if you can't do that or you won't do that, then you're guaranteed to have an interesting, very interesting, maybe shocking event at death. At physical death. So we hear things sometimes that stick, don't we? We hear or we read things that stick. And I remember hearing once someone who I felt some confidence in, that he had some insight. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I tend to listen to people who seem to have insight a little bit more than people who seem to be just jabbering. Like the other day I got my messages off my cell phone, and there was one message that, you know, okay, this is an important message. And the next message, it seemed to just slide in. There was like no thing. And all of a sudden, I got like channel 57. And there was this guy talking like, it just came in. He was like, you got to look out for that stuff. His voice was really weird. You got to look out for that stuff because there's germs in the food. And it just started coming through. It's like, whoa. okay, we're in, you know, virtual reality. Okay. And it was just like, whoa, that's interesting. And what if he wants to talk to me? Okay, so I listened to it for a while and I was like, okay, well, enough of that. That was what was important to him in that moment. And it sounded inebriated, if you know what I mean. You know? It's like, I got channel 57.8 in there, and it was like, whoa. You know, I tried to stay with it, I got to be honest with you. I tried to stay with the whole thing, but, you know, I was like, this could go on for a while, so I think I'll just hang up. You know, it's just a voice message. Okay, so people are living, if you observe this, people are living in their believed reality. And what happens in meditation is that comes up and it's seen almost like a screen, almost like a movie. And the movie has depth to it, and there's characters, and there are relationships, and there's an unfoldment, and it's ever new and different, and it's fascinating, and you can get absorbed in it, and you can get seduced by it, and you can believe this is really important, and this is not important, and I should be doing this, and I shouldn't be doing that. And on it goes. And in a moment, that can pop, that screen can pop open, and you can actually see through it. And when that seeing through happens, what I'm specifically referring to now is that not in an anxious way necessarily, but in a very energized and liberating way, exhilarating way, it's seen that your beliefs, your assumptions, and your very perceptions, and I'm going to go into this a little more, your very perceptions are just that. And it's like, wow, aha, whoa, this is what insight is. This is what seeing clearly means. This is what liberates life. Because before, this was all, and let's not miss it, going inside, letting that zipper open up, whether it's this way, or both. Sometimes it's darn right frightening and or darn right confusing. It's a maze. And you don't know where the flashlight is. And you don't know where the beginning is, and you don't know where the end is, and you don't know where the entry door is, and you don't know where the exit door is. And it feels like you. So, as the thoughts settle just a bit, and there's a deeper connection with the sensory life, sometimes with that, there's a comfort that emerges, there's a peace. This settles down, and there's just this vibrancy of energy, of sensation, of body. It's kind of simple, and for some people it feels really good. For other people, this can quiet down, but then this really starts hurting. Or this doesn't bother quieting down, it just actually gets noisier sometimes in the silence. And then this starts hurting. The energy blocks, you could say, in this form, physical or emotional blocks, they start to emerge. And some people go, this isn't working. This is not what I want. I'm feeling worse. I should stop. I should stop. Zip. Zip it up. Enough looking. Enough of this. There was an interesting fellow once. He got the world record, and he got into the Guinness Book of World Records because he jumped off a bridge in New Zealand, and he did the highest free fall jump that had ever been done at that period of time. Since that time, others have jumped off things higher up, and they took away his record. Okay? And he became like a psychiatrist, and then he got into meditation. And he had his own little humorous take on the three marks of existence that were taught by the historical Buddha. The historical Buddha taught life is unreliable, it is expressed in a relative sense as impermanence and change, and there is no separate I or self to whom these changes happen. Sometimes translated as dukkha or unreliability. Anicca, which means change. Anatta, these are Pali words that mean no separate, solid self to whom life happens. So he translated that. He said, what it really means is, life is tough, it'll put you through lots of changes, but don't take it personal. Don't take it personal. I'm sorry, I can't help it. Mm-hmm. You just gave me the finger. Or you just stepped on my toe. Or you just fired me. Or you just didn't, you know, fill it in. Imagine this. Imagine the full sense of awareness that may be available in any one given moment. That awareness moves through the whole day, and no matter what happens, it's not taken personally. How would that day be? Some people would go, I like taking it personal. I'm invested in my feelings. Don't take them away from me. I'm not saying take away your feelings. I'm not saying take away anything except the way in which you suffer when you take it personally. Easier said than done, huh? All it takes is one honest, relatively intimate, doesn't need to be romantic or sexual, one honest, ongoing, one honest, ongoing relationship with one other person to help you see what you take personal. Fast. And, I might add, every day. It blows the bathroom mirror right out of the bathroom. Look in that mirror and try to get that kind of awareness that comes when you are with one other person intimately and honestly. So as the mind settles, the thinking mind settles, inevitably, as the meditation is allowed to develop, this body settles. The emotions settle, the breathing settles, the blockages dissipate, and for some people, they might sit for 10 years regularly, 20 years regularly, 30 years regularly, and for whatever reason that nobody seems, to me at least, to be able to adequately explain, they're still dealing with a lot of blockages, so to speak. And other people, within a year or two, it's so clear. This body-mind process just becomes very clear. Open. And in that openness, reactivity, fighting with life, resisting it, pushing and pulling, dissipates. Those are happy people. And there's children like that, there's adolescents like that, there are people at all so-called chronological ages of life who are living in openness and happiness because they've stopped fighting with life. And they're letting life flow through. I put my hands like this, but it's not just that way. It's like this, it's like this, it's like in all directions. They're letting life flow through. Like this is a flute that's designed to play beautiful music. But the notes, the wind, the life has to be given a chance to flow through it. And so what the meditation does, very poignantly, is it shows where there has been a learning called resistance. A learning called struggle. A learning called pushing and pulling. A learning called taking it personal. A learning called, I want it my way. These things are discovered as things that were learned. And even if it isn't like cognitively clear where and how they were learned, they energetically untie themselves. Because the whole reason for having intellectual understanding about yourself would be to live in peace and harmony, isn't it? It isn't just to collect the data and write it down and just be still uptight. I got all the facts. I know exactly why I'm uptight in my shoulder. Shoulder's still uptight. I know exactly why. So we move out of this need, sometimes it's an obsession with understanding why, and we move into a trusting how. How is this process happening? How is this living process happening? And in an instant, that's how insight emerges. It's instantaneous. And actually, you can't even tell if there's things that you did that actually promoted that insight arising or not. It just happens. It's like a bolt of lightning. It's mysterious. In an instant, it can be realized that you're not the body-mind process, but you're not the body-mind process also. It means you are it and not it simultaneously. Or another way to say that, you are it and you're something beyond it at the same time. You are it and you're something prior to it at the same time. So, honestly, if you had to vote right now and I said to you this, how many of you believe you are the body-mind process? Please raise your hand if you're willing to vote. Okay. So how many of you believe you're not? Okay. So we got to, and the rest of you are just abstaining.
You didn't give us the choice to say we
didn't say
both. Oh, okay. How many of you believe you're both? How many of you realize that your beliefs have nothing to do with what's actually happening?
The problem is the word you. I'm not buying into you.
No, he's not buying you. Okay. How do we say it then, Rich?
You can't.
You can't. Okay. So I guess I should shut up. It's the end of the talk if you can't say it. There's a point, right? There's a point where the words fail, huh? Isn't there? So, what happens is the goodness, the vitality, the aliveness, and you want to add beauty as a color, that's a color that's added, that human beings add. It's a quality that human beings add. It's very subjective. This is beautiful, that's beautiful. We get enough people who say that's beautiful, like sunsets are beautiful, right? Sunsets are beautiful. We put that there. The sunset's not saying to the world, I'm beautiful, look at me. It's just doing what it's doing. We put that quality there. Okay. But that which we call beautiful, that which we call vital, that which we call alive, that which we call real, as opposed to unreal, or false, begins to emerge in the meditation. And it emerges right through this body-mind process. You could say, as this body-mind process. So now I want to give a few words about perception. Okay. Everything that is seen through the eyes, heard through the ears, smelled through the nose, tasted through the tongue, felt through the body, that arises on the mind as thought, mind state, feelings, emotions, is conditioned by perception until it isn't. Okay, so you could say all of those things I just mentioned are right out here, and they are being viewed through a lens called perception. Good example. There was a time in the flow of this life form that you could call yourself where there was no understanding of what an apple is. At some point, that perception of apple was conditioned into our mind. Now I ask you this question. Imagine an apple. See it in your mind's eye. Notice how difficult it is to look at that and not consider it an apple. You with me? Now you could say, well, it's a fruit. That's still conditioned. That's perception that says it's a fruit. Notice how strong the perception is if we put an apple right here and we put an orange right here. Okay? Nice orangey orange. Nice whatever color the apple is. Okay? Look how difficult it is to be out of that perception that this is an apple and this is an orange. Why didn't they say it was the other way around? Why wasn't the apple an orange an apple? Human beings made that up. Guess what? All the thoughts that are happening are perceived a certain way. So someone might have a certain thought, and that thought is exciting to them. Somebody else has a similar thought, maybe even if possible, not actually possible, but as close as possible, the same words, and that's not exciting to them at all. That's anxious. And that's going on right now in this room. So, for example, if I turn to Rich and I say, okay, Rich, what was the least interesting thing that came out of this mouth tonight, or the most interesting thing? And he'd go, da 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 da. And then we go to Jess. Same thing. Big variety would happen, right? Some people might see some overlap. That's based on perception. And that is conditioned into our mind. By what? By our environment? By those around us? By our parents? Or our caretakers? By our school situation? What meditation does is it actually allows perception to be seen for what it is. By what? By the light of consciousness. The light of consciousness sees perception as it is, just as the light of consciousness sees the body as sensation. Sees that it's a perception that this is a masculine or male body, and this is a feminine body. That's a perception. It's not to be thrown away. We use it in conventional life. Even though I like that Honda Insight out there on the cul-de-sac, whoever owns that, I will not get in that car as if it's mine. I will get in my car based on perception and the conventional boundary called don't take what isn't yours. There's a little girl that my wife's been talking to in the school system who's been taking things wherever she can. From the room, at home, she's moving stuff around, she's taking stuff from her classmates. And it's quite a ring that she's working out here. Crime ring, you might say. She's only 8. So they caught up with her, and they interview. It's nice to interview children instead of, like, club them. What's going on here, they said to her. She said, first thing, what? What? Well, you know, you've been taking things from here, 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 and here, here. And she said, yes. And they said, well, why are you taking things? And she said, because it's fun. And then a little explanation was given that, you know, these things belong to other people, you know, and you really don't want to do this. Maybe she never got that information, I'm not sure. Well, then eventually she said, okay, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And they had to work out a little contract, you know, please don't do this again, it's disruptive. Somewhere in there, you could probably imagine, she had the perception that not only was this fun, but maybe it was okay. That would be very upsetting to whoever owns that Honda Insight out there if I snatched your keys, just because I like it, I snatched your keys and I took off in your Honda Insight and I left you my car. which, in case you're interested, it's also a hybrid, so don't complain. We've set these parameters, and they make sense in the conventional world. But can you see the pervasive, ongoing investment in our perceptions? And now we're going to turn it right back, so to speak, inside here. The perceptions that we have about what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, what's pleasant, what's unpleasant, what brings for happiness, what brings for success. And I could tick off many other things. What happens in the meditation is that perception is seen as a lens through which life, including, you could say, yourself, is being viewed. And that is a huge, huge, gigantic relief. To not be in the prison of your perceptions and believing that they're reality. And your intellectual mind may relax deeply at that point about these existential questions, or it may freak out and try to reestablish another set of perceptions about what is real. Because the bottom line here about finding out what is real is that you don't have a clue. That's the beauty of the secret, is that it's a mystery. And we all are walking, talking, breathing, living mysteries. So that was somewhat of my own perception. Circuitous, is that the word?
Circuitous.
Circuitous, yeah. Route to here. I'll stop now. What's going on? Anything about what I've said?